In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Following the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
And welcome to another episode of Strange Planet. Thanks for sticking me in your ear, as always. Looking forward to this conversation. We are going to discuss dousing, the remarkable case of Lindsay Higgins. If you don't know about the Lindsay Higgins story, her story was the subject of the Netflix series Haunted. Episode 5, I think, in the first...
Yes, season 1, episode 5.
There you go. And we're going to discuss Lindsay, dowsing, reincarnation, and much more with two wonderful gentlemen. Dan Baldwin, professional writer, often a ghostwriter for other professionals. He's written, co-written, or ghosted more than 50 books, has won numerous local, regional, national awards, certified clinical hypnotherapist, plays the Native American flute, an expert pendulum dowser, having used the pendulum to assist in finding missing persons for over 15 years. George Sewell describes himself as a cognitive philanthropist, active in all aspects of theater. His undergraduate degree is speech and journalism from Northwestern State University in Louisiana, and a Master of Arts degree in drama and communications from the University of New Orleans. As a playwright, he's written plays for community theater, college theater, dinner theater, awarded the Louisiana Division of the Arts Fellowship in Theater Playwriting. Vocationally, he's retired as a counselor, has a master's in counseling from Louisiana Tech, a licensed prevention professional, program manager, administrator in the field of addictive disorders, including problem gambling. And together, they are co-authors of Paranormal Pendulum 3, The Abduction of Lindsay Higgins, The UFO Phenomenon, The Spirit World, and Beyond. Gentlemen, welcome both. How are you?
Great.
Glad to be here.
I could take up half the show just reciting your impressive resumes. First of all, let's start with a real simple one. I hope it's a simple one. And that is, to the uninitiated, can you explain pendulum dowsing?
Yeah, it's a very simple process. People are familiar probably with the old farmer out with the Y-shaped stick looking for water back in the North 40.
Yes.
Yeah, it's called the witching stick. Well, it's the same. It's the same principle. The only difference is I use a weight on a string. And what you do is basically you ask yes or no questions, and a spin to the right will be a yes, spin to the left will be a no. So, you know, is the missing person in Arizona? Yes. Is the missing person in Phoenix? Yes. Is the missing person north of, you know, Interstate 10? Yes or no. And, you develop the answer to your problem, whatever it may be, through yes or no questions. It's an extremely simple technique and easy to learn. The challenge is in keeping your mind focused.
And Dan, you had a powerful urge to use the pendulum to find missing children. I think you've described it as a command, really. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was really strange because I describe myself, in especially in my earlier paranormal works, as a psychic on training wheels. I was 50 years old before I started developing my talent. Didn't even know I had a talent. Turned out to be pendulum dowsing. But yeah, I'm not a clairaudient. I mean, I don't hear voices. I'm not a medium. I can't see spirits or anything like that. But one day, I swear to God, I was out walking late at night, just kind of clearing the head. And I heard a voice that said, "Find missing children," clear as a bell. And of course, you know, I said, well, either God is talking to me or I'm insane, you know, one or the other. And the damnedest thing that I kind of brushed it off, and it would not go away. I mean, it just throbbed in the back of my head. And finally, after, you know, 3 months of just being nagged by this voice or this command, I just said, okay, show me a door and I'll go through. And it occurred to me at that point that my family has always said, you know, there's a psychic strain within the family. I never gave it any thought, but I said, well, maybe that's how I should approach this problem. You know, I started hanging out with some psychics and going to psychic bookstores like you normally would. And one day I saw a woman with the rock on a string, and it just, you know, snapped. I can do that. So I picked it up, and basically I'm a self-taught pendulum dowser.
And how about for you, George?
Was well aware of Dan's talents with the pendulum, and was intrigued by, particularly with his degree of accuracy in map dowsing. I mean, he could really narrow down a search area to, you know, maybe the size of a football. And he wrote two books based on pendulum dowsing. One kind of a how-to. The second one is using the pendulum to talk directly with the departed and find out what's going on their side. And much of that research was done in the Shreveport-Bossier City area in northwest Louisiana. Dan used to live here. And in watching the process, it was fascinating to see the clarity of the questions and the nature of the swing of the pendulum. I mean, if it was a very strong answer, I mean, it would be a very large swing. Or if it was a very... kind of iffy answer, sort of, yeah, I'm going to say yeah. I don't want to say no because you'll leave this line of questioning, but rephrase the question so it might be a little small swing. So there was just a lot of variety to it. And so I had a pendulum and started practicing with it. And lo and behold, it's a valid technique and can be easily learned. The trick part, again, is stepping back and allowing the flow of information without being colored by the individual holding the pendulum.
Right. Get out of the way, I guess.
Yeah. The real danger is, you know, you're holding the pendulum, you know, am I going to win the lottery this weekend? Yeah. You know, or, you know, is the beautiful little five-year-old girl still alive? Yeah. Because that's what you want.
Right.
You got to stay completely unemotional, completely focused on a lot, like George said, allowing the process to develop.
So that brings us to the third book, the third installment, Paranormal Pendulum 3, and the remarkable case of Lindsay Higgins. Again, this was picked up by Netflix in the series Haunted, episode five, season one.
Mm-hmm.
How did you become connected with, before we get into Lindsay's remarkable story, with this case?
Let me start off and then let George finish real quick. Yeah, we were researching Georgia was essential in researching the paranormal, how to talk to the deceased book. And in doing that, we met Lindsay Higgins and researched her reincarnation angle. About a third of book two is about Lindsay Higgins and her reincarnation. And George is the one that introduced me to Lindsay and brought her, into the circle, so to speak. So, yeah, George, why don't you tell them how that happened? Because that's real interesting.
Yeah, this was all in September of 2017. When just out of the blue one night, my telephone rang, and usually I don't answer because it's usually junk phone calls at night. But I had the urge, well, I'll just pick this one up just in case. And it was, is this George Sewell? Yes. This is Lindsay Higgins. Joe Beth Baggett said I could call you and we could talk. Oh, and what might we talk about? I recognize the person who gave her my name, that lady, she's now deceased, was acquainted with my understandings and background with the Mutual UFO Network as Assistant State Director for Louisiana, and having talked to quite a number of folks through the years, mostly late 80s, early 90s, about their experiences. And Joe Beth was aware of what all Lindsay had encountered in her life and thought, well, this would be a good starting place. So, we talked about 2 hours and just kind of went down the litany, starting when she was maybe 2.5, 3 years old, with a particular event that we do cover in the book. And at the end of the conversation, I was able to say, well, Lindsay, just about everything you've told me, I've heard before from other people in various locations and different time frames. So there's some commonality, there's some validity to your experiences. And that was a great relief for her. Because up until this time, she'd pretty much sat on it, had not been able to discuss it with anybody. And she reached a point where she had to come out with it. She just had to do it. And this is where she ran across a particular podcast that mentioned that a Los Angeles-based production company was looking for people who had lifelong paranormal events, true stories. And she decided, well, that's how I'm going to do it. So she wrote up her story, sent it off to the production company. They got back with her within like 14 hours, saying we want to set up a formal meeting on Skype. So the next day they had the formal meeting and boom, okay, you're in, we're going to do this. Then they asked a question. Do you know of any other people in the Shreveport-Bossier City area who've had similar experiences or know of them? And that's when she contacted Joe Beth. Joe Beth said, call George. And that's how Lindsay and I got acquainted. We did not meet personally until we were on location outside of in California.
Pasadena, it was. Pasadena.
Yes, Pasadena. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful 1880s ranch. Oh, gosh, that's a gorgeous place. But that's when we first met in person.
Right. And we should point out that the Higgins family, fairly well known, I would think, in Shreveport, right? Because the father was a restaurateur.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Very well-known family. They've owned a number of very popular restaurants. Solid businessman. Good folk all the way around. They're just nice people.
So Lindsay Higgins, what's remarkable, well, you would know, you're mm-hmm. involved with MUFON and you're both, investigating these things. I would think, though, that for someone to have conscious memories going back to the age of 2.5, 3, mm-hmm. I mean, these are not memories that are retrieved through a regression.
Correct.
These are conscious memories. I think there's actually even a name for that in sort of in ufology or the contact world, mm-hmm. a specific name for it. Is there?
Yeah, I'd say that these are actual memories Lindsay has, even when she was 2.5 and 3. I mean, she's not repeating what she was told. She remembers that particular event. And some of the instances were very, very startling dreams that were repetitive. So she could recount what she dreamed about, and we were able to work with that. And in most cases, find that this was really a flashback of an actual occurrence. And that's the beauty of using the pendulum. It's an approach that I'd never heard of being used for this kind of investigation, to use the word investigation. And it proved to be very, very effective. And after cross checks and double checking with other sources, much of the information was okay. This is genuine. We can go with this.
So we're going to take a time out here in a few minutes, but let's get this conversation regarding Lindsay's remarkable timeline going, and then we'll pick it up on the other side. So that first incident, that happened on the second floor of this restaurant. Her father converted an old railroad station into this restaurant.
Yes.
So the restaurant's down below, and they're living above, I guess.
Yes.
And she's 2 and a half. She's wandering out on the balcony. Take it from there.
Well, what it was is when the family's downstairs working in a restaurant, Lindsay's upstairs in her room. She's got a much younger sister in another room in a crib. And Lindsay would just, this the way she describes it, she was just bored and looking out the window. It's a nice sunny day, and she wanted to go outside. So her friend Morlock obliged and opened the window for her. So she went out to this balcony and was having a good time. Of course, people outside coming in the restaurant noticed this child running around the balcony. So they alert the family. They run up there, pull Lindsay back in, close the very large, heavy, double-hung window. Dan and I have inspected the window. And asked the obvious, how did you get outside? Morlock opened the window for me. What do you do with that? There is no other explanation for how Lindsay got outside other than the window was open. There's nobody upstairs who could have or would have opened it. Therefore, I'm kind of just left with somehow this window was opened by her imaginary friend, Morlock.
Right. And she had a description of Morlock, right?
Indeed. Indeed, her father asked, well, what does he look like? And she described kind of a slim, gray-haired fellow, very pleasant, very likable, but he smoked different. Her father smoked cigarettes. She's familiar with that. But what she was trying to describe here, well, he smokes, but it's a big brown thing. She didn't know about cigars. But she described a cigar, and her father immediately just, whoa, hello, because he told us that very often he would smell cigar smoke in the building when nobody's smoking cigars. So that's an aroma that still continues to this day. When we had our sessions inside Central Station, some of the staff there were still reporting that they would often capture a wafting aroma of cigar.
Remarkable. All right, we're going to pick this up on the other side. My conversation with George Sewell, Dan Baldwin, Paranormal Pendulum 3 co-authors, and the remarkable case of Lindsay Higgins, right after these.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extra help.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
The truth will set you free. Free. But first, it will really tick you off. Welcome back to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
And we are back. George Sewell and Dan Baldwin, co-authors of Paranormal Pendulum 3. So we were talking about Lindsay Higgins, 2.5 years old, found on the balcony upstairs in their family restaurant in Shreveport, Louisiana, and there's no other explanation. I mean, how she could have possibly, on her own, this little child, raised these very heavy windows, double-hung windows, to get outside. She said it was her friend Morlock. And her father, Joe, sounds like kind of a no-nonsense guy. I didn't buy that story.
But on the other hand, the window was open, so... Yeah, it kind of nagged at him, apparently, and what he disclosed when we were having our sessions over the past 2 years for this book was he mentioned that he had a suspicion that if indeed there was a spirit presence in the railroad station, who may have actually managed to manipulate the window to open it, he had a hunch as to who that person might be. And we kind of explored that in the process of compiling all this information. And in fact, I think we have in a transcript form in the book where an individual that Dan and I were thinking was Morlock turned out not to be the case, but the person we thought was Morlock, that would be W.D. Woodworth. W.D. Woodworth asked the spirit of this other gentleman who was a railroad man who had an office in Central Station.
George Couch, is that his name? George Couch?
Pete Couch. Pete Couch is his name.
Couch. Pete Couch, right.
And
right.
As it turned out, yes, Pete Couch was the spirit watching over Lindsay at that time at the behest of W.D. Woodworth, who, as we learned, was her father in her previous incarnation. So there's a lot of reincarnation in this and a lot of continuity, particularly with Lindsay, her sister, and her father maintaining those same relationship in the just previous incarnation as the Woodworth family.
So, and Pete Couch was a railroad, president of a railroad.
Right. I think it was Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana. I'm not exactly sure.
He was a friend of Joe, who is also a railroad enthusiast. And
Joe's a big enthusiast. Now, at the time that Pete Couch was there, Pete Couch died in 1955, but as a child, Joe frequently spent time down at the station. He loved trains. He loved the whole thing. And he did come in contact with Pete Couch as a child. And when he had an opportunity later in life to acquire the Central Station and get it on the historic records and turn it into the restaurant, I mean, that was just his moment. He just loved that.
Right. So, Joe is maybe taking a bit of a flyer here and thinking, well, I don't necessarily believe in ghosts and this sort of thing, but if it were to be a spirit, it's Pete Couch.
Well, that description that Lindsay gave, that's the way Pete Couch looked.
She
gave a description of him as he looked at the time when her father, Joe, was around there.
So, Dan, I think maybe I'll go to you to pick this thread, this incredible thread, up, and that is the W.D. Woodworth angle here and this aspect of reincarnation, using your pendulum, contacting spirits, trying to get a lead you to a cemetery. Yeah. Can you pick it up from there?
Yeah, it's like a detective story almost. And it really shows the involvement of the spirit world in connection with the UFO phenomena. But it started one day. George and I had planned to go to the old Oakland Cemetery, the old cemetery in Shreveport, and just to nose around, see what we could come up with. There's some, pretty famous local people buried there. So we were going to see what we could come up with. That morning, we went to a location and just said, well, let's see if we can come up with anybody here while we're waiting around, just kind of on a lark. And the place we went to was a prominent point that was currently has a VA hospital on it. It was a fort back in the Civil War. The Native Americans lived there for thousands of years. So it's kind of a special place, high bluff overlooking the Red River. And we just, on the spur of the moment, sat down at a picnic table and asked, is there any spirit here would like to talk to us? And a fellow came up and we had a conversation and we recorded it. And we asked him if he would, we're going to go to the cemetery this afternoon. We'd like to pay our respects to your grave. Are you buried there? He said, yeah. So if you'll meet us there, take us to your gravesite. We'd just like to, do the honors thing. That afternoon, George and I go there and we stop at the edge of the place, park, meet up with this guy, the spirit of this guy again. And he takes us, down into the cemetery and stops at a particular gravesite. And the name on it was Pinnock. And we said, well, that's not your name. And at that point, we were handed off to the spirit of this guy named Pinnock. And Pinnock led us around the cemetery, again, using the dowsing technique. Do we go north, south, east, or west? Do we go 100 feet? Do we go 50 feet? Do we go 5 feet? Are we at the right spot? And eventually, he led us to the top of a hill, a rather prominent very old gravesite, very prominent family, nice, gated and the iron work around it and all that. And it was the site of the W.D. Woodworth family. And that's where we started investigating W.D. And at first we thought Lindsay was the reincarnation of W.D. Woodworth's wife. This proves the point of doing multiple sessions with the pendulum dowsing. Through more sessions, we learned that Lindsay Higgins is the reincarnated daughter, not the wife. So she is a reincarnated daughter of Sally Murph Woodworth. And it turned out that's how we met W.D. Woodworth, who turned out to be her dad in the previous incarnation. He was quite a character. He started popping up in different sessions.
Yeah.
Not even related to Lindsay, but W.D. was he was from Ireland. He served in the British Navy, served in the American Navy in the Civil War, fought out west in the Indian Wars, was wounded in the eye, came back to Shreveport, and became his nickname was Blind Billy. And became something of a rounder. And I think he liked George and I, and I think George and I kind of took to him.
Yeah.
In another lifetime, we were probably drinking buddies.
Well, what's interesting, I was able to research and found a lot of newspaper clippings that reference W.D. and the family back in the late 1900s and very early 20th century. And it was kind of interesting. W.D. would post an advertisement in the paper warning merchants in this town, do not give credit to my wife. I will not be good for it. And then his wife would post a similar ad saying, do not serve my husband liquor. it was just curious that's the way they were carrying on like this. Very, very colorful, characters.
I think I'd be drinking buddies with WD myself.
Oh, yeah.
So what is...
Oh, you probably were, you know. You never can tell.
Never can tell. All right. Well, let's get that pendulum going. What is then the connect the dots between W.D. Woodworth and Morlock, a.k.a. Pete Couch?
W.D. asked Pete Couch, the spirit of Pete Couch, to kind of keep an eye on Lindsay while she was living there in the old railroad station. That appears to be just what it was.
And that came through in the communication.
Pendulum sessions we had inside Central Station with Lindsay's father and several other people, and that was clarified then. And okay, Pete Couch opened the window, but W.D. asked Pete to keep an eye on Lindsay while she was living there at Central Station. That seemed to be
In the book, you know, in each chapter we explain what happened in the chapter, but we also include excerpts, transcripts from the actual pendulum session, so the reader can get an actual feel for how the information was developed and what it's like to actually conduct a spirit session through pendulum dowsing.
I would like to pick up on that thread when we come back and talk about how these pendulum sessions work exactly. George Sewell, Dan Baldwin, co-authors of Paranormal Pendulum 3, as we continue to discuss the remarkable life and times of Lindsay Higgins right here on Strange Planet.
An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extra help.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extra help.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extra help.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Back with George Sewell, Dan Baldwin, co-authors of Paranormal Pendulum 3. So you were talking about these pendulum sessions when you're communicating with the spirit world. And earlier you were sort of describing when you were in the cemetery and the pendulum was giving you, fairly precise instructions, the direction, the number of, feet from your target area and so forth. When you're communicating with a spirit, how does this communication with the pendulum work?
Yeah, well, one of the really real benefits of pendulum dowsing and communicating with the spirits is you're not sitting there hoping for, a knock on wood or maybe a single word EVP or something like that, or just your hair raising on your hands. You can actually conduct full-fledged conversations. And we've talked with spirits up to 10, 15, 20 minutes at a time. So you can hold extended conversations with the spirit world as long as the spirit is willing to converse with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you conduct it just like you would, just like we're talking right now. You ask questions, George or Dan will give an answer. You ask a follow-up, Dan or George will give an answer. And you just keep going.
But are they communicating through the pendulum through the movement of the pendulum? Or?
The pendulum is just, there's no magic in the pendulum whatsoever. It's a rock on a string. It's a tool, that's all it is. But it's a tool that allows you to connect, to use your subconscious to connect with other information. And that other information may be the information stored in the ether, the Akashic records, however you want to call that. You can also contact spirits. And in our case, you can have conversations with ETs. But the pendulum itself, again, it's just a tool. It's a rock on a string.
Yeah. There's also a dynamic, Richard, in the sessions we had. We often had several other people working with us. So it's not just me and Dan all the time. We'll have one evidential medium attending also with that particular skill set. We may have another pendulum dowser in attendance. We may have a couple of academics who are really, really good at asking questions. And once there's a momentum kind of set up, and then each individual will kind of come up with, I need to ask this, or I want to ask that. So we cover territory that Dan and I might not necessarily have covered because of this group setting and everybody getting that energy. And I'm sure it's also another way for outside information to be introduced into that particular session. So it's very lively. There's nothing boring or tedious about it. It's really quite fascinating.
But when the spirit is communicating, when you're communicating with W.D. Woodworth or with Sally Woodworth, who was Lindsay Higgins in a previous incarnation, just so that I understand, are you hearing the voices? Is it almost more of a telepathic communication?
No, it's just question and answer, yes or no. That's the process. Like there's a session where Dan and I were having a pendulum session with Lindsay. And at the same time in that session, we were also asking questions to the spirit of Sally Murph Woodruff, which was Lindsay in the previous incarnation, but she was taking form with her spirit of Sally Murph. So we're talking to a 3D Lindsay and the same soul we're talking to as spirit form as Sally Murph. And it's just question and answer, yes or no format. Right. And just which way the pendulum swing, yes, no, or if it doesn't do anything, we usually have to re-ask the question.
Interesting.
Let me jump in here real quick. But to avoid the obvious question, the spirit does not move the pendulum. The pendulum is moved by the micro muscles in your fingers actually move the pendulum, but they move in response to what your subconscious is hearing. So the spirit says something, it goes down through your subconscious into the muscles, and that's what moves the pendulum. But the spirit doesn't touch it at all.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, and kind of reinforce that, Richard. A number of folks, but in particular the mediums who were also a part of this team, of course, they would pick up the response instantly before the pendulum even started to move. So it was good to have that perspective as well.
Right. Well, this is interesting because I don't know how common this is, but here you are interviewing Lindsay Higgins and also communicating with her previous incarnation from past life, Sally Woodruff. So two spirits, two different, expressions.
Mm-hmm.
Has that happened before?
All the time. We, yeah,
oh, yeah.
We, Yeah, George came up with the term for it we use in the book called stacking.
Stacking.
Where you're stacking, where you actually have the same spirit in different forms talking at the same time.
Hmm.
Yeah, the concept of spirit is a lot more complex than we thought going into this.
Mm-hmm.
So while you're recording, because you record your sessions.
Absolutely.
But you sometimes, you're not actively looking for EVPs, but occasionally you get EVPs, right?
Yeah, we record the sessions because we want to keep an exact record of who said what and when it was said and the whole process. And because we put a lot of the transcriptions into the book, mm-hmm. but every once in a while we would get a solid EVP. For example, we were at the Spring Street Museum, which was owned by a very prominent family back in the day. And the upstairs is set up like the old parlor, you know, the 1880s, very fancy, very upscale parlor. And one of the museum staff was, you know, we made contact with the spirits, and she, one of the personnel at the museum actually complimented the female spirit on how well her house was decorated. And we've got a very clear, "Why, thank you," from a female voice out of the blue.
And there was another EVP that was particularly notable, same location. I don't know if it was this particular session, but we were having a session at the Spring Street Museum with one of the brothers who built the particular building. It was originally a bank. And that brother was acquainted with the W.D. Woodward family. So we were trying to get information of what at this time is when we thought that Lindsay was W.D.'s wife. And we were getting information about, well, what did she look like? What kind of clothes did she wear? What were her interests? We're trying to get material to present to Lindsay to see if anything resonated. And after the session, we're back at the house listening to that particular tape. And Dan and I were both listening to that particular series of questions. And then, boom, a very clear, firm male voice, EVP, "Lindsay is key." Whoa, where'd that come from? And we listened to it again. And no question, it's there. "Lindsay is key." And we listened to it a good half dozen times. And a couple of weeks later, Dan's back in Arizona and he's doing the transcription of that particular recording, and the EVP is not there.
The handiwork of WD, perhaps, the prankster? Yes.
That's what he says.
That we later had sessions and WD fessed up. "Yeah, I put it there. Yeah, I took it out."
As a demonstration of what yes. it's capable yes. of?
Yes, we had many demonstrations in the course of this investigation of what they on the other side, can do. And there's quite a lot that they can do, including manipulating electronics.
Right. Or lifting a double-hung window.
Sure.
Double-hung window. That's child's play.
Yes.
So how do we then, if it's possible, connect the reincarnation aspect of this story to the abduction aspect of the story? We should talk a little bit about some of Lindsay's experiences, you know, her intense abdominal pains and puncture wounds and things that she, I think, attributed to an abduction.
All that's addressed, and it is related to what I would call the visitations. I don't particularly like the word abductions because that has a very negative criminal connotation. And it turned out this is not what's going on. What we pieced together over 2 years is that 6,000 years ago, on a different plane than the dearly departed are, it's a little higher frequency than that plane, the evolved spirit that we called ET, and that our two mediums got a very strong impression of as a very highly evolved, very powerful entity, ET, using that reference, and Lindsay had a meeting, so to speak, and Lindsay was asked, would she want to participate in a longitudinal process? I won't say experiment because they weren't experimenting. They had a goal, but it would take several thousand years for it to become manifest. And it was to affect human beings' longevity and their ability to use their sixth sense to communicate more freely with the other dimensions. And because Lindsay would be reincarnating, that seemed to be an element that was necessary for her participation. So she agreed to this. And of course, when you, you know, when you incarnate, you lose all of this memory. So you don't have the recollection that, of what's going on. And once Lindsay got a understanding of really what was happening, it made a big difference. And she said, well, if I agreed to do it, then by golly, we're going to continue. But let's take away the pain. Let's not have the discomfort. And there was an agreement made. Lindsay made that request. It was, okay, sure, fine, we can do that. And she has had some visitation since then, and she did not associate any discomfort with that. So that was a good relief.
Right, because previously there was some severe abdominal pain when she was, what, 8 or 9?
Yeah, starting at the age of 9, and it was undiagnosable. She was hospitalized, every test in the world done. There was absolutely no explanation for the pains, and doctors just kind of wrote it off as, well, her mother's got cancer, and she's just trying to get attention, you know, that kind of silliness.
And so what memory does she have of this this experience that is connected to that pain?
She had, we cover in the book, a couple of flashbacks where she was triggered. One was as an adult, went to a sensory deprivation center just to, you know, get in the tank and just lose all sensors and just kind of meditate or whatever. She got in that, and that sparked a memory of being in a holding area inside a craft, awaiting for whatever the procedures were to be, and that just freaked her out. She leapt out of that chamber and just freaked out, just scared her husband to death. But in describing what she was flashing back to, she related an event that would explain some of the discomfort, that there were some procedures done that the individuals who were working with her probably did not know that they were inflicting pain. That did kind of surface in a few of the sessions that the workers, not the ET, the supervisor, but the actual people or entities who were doing the physical work, when it was physical, sometimes it's astral, it's not physical, but they weren't always aware that what they're doing was causing discomfort for Lindsay.
So you also discovered about 4,000 years ago, there's I think it's called Poverty Point.
Yes.
In Louisiana. This is a UN World Heritage Site.
Yes, indeed.
You contacted a medicine man using the pendulum. Was he? Did he go by the name of Jocko?
It's a name I gave him as a character, Jocko. Okay. The name did not come from the individual himself.
Okay. So,
although I know who the individual is who previously was that individual. He's deceased, and that's the individual we were communicating with the pendulum about his previous lifetime as this medicine man at Poverty Point, which is a very ancient and very, very prominent mound building culture trading center. They traded from the Great Lakes down to South America, apparently. And it was a huge trading center. And there was this medicine man. And what we were able to glean was that he was kind of a go-between with the population at Poverty Point and the Sky People, who made frequent appearances at Poverty Point. We didn't go into detail with exactly how that worked. Dan and I are currently researching that particular subject for Paranormal Pendulum Book 4, which will explore the Sky People.
All right, but Lindsay Higgins has a connection there too.
She was there,
Yeah.
She was there.
Yeah, she was there as a male. From either Mexico or Central America, specifically came to Poverty Point as an apprentice to Jocko. So Lindsay was there, as best we can determine, and we will pursue that in the next book as well. And one thing that Lindsay has psychic abilities, not always full-fledged or necessarily directional, but at that time, we suspect that a lot of her training with Jocko was to develop the psychic abilities, the sixth sense, the whole thing, and that training has carried over for these thousands of years.
So was she sort of assisting as a go-between between the Sky People and
She was more of an apprentice to Jopko than a go-between.
And that was more his role? Jopko was the go-between?
Yes.
That's one of the things we're definitely going to be exploring.
Yeah.
I'm not sure go-between is an accurate term.
Okay.
Yeah.
In some of the research that we're conducting now, there doesn't seem to be a need for a go-between. From what we're finding early on in the researches, they would show up and the people would say, hey, they're back. There was no need for a go-between.
Have you used the pendulum to contact spirits, you know, our ancestors, who, and ask them about interactions with sky people?
Yeah, that's what we're doing now. George is in the center of the mound building culture. I'm out here in the middle of cliff dwelling center out in Arizona. So we're doing two entirely different cultures, but we're asking about interaction with the sky people. And what I'm getting out here is that there was definite interaction between the Pueblo people for sure and the quote sky people. And that it was not scheduled, but pretty regular, and it wasn't anything to be frightened about. It wasn't, there was no fear. It was like companies coming. They were wide open to it.
Yeah, we'll be hopefully getting some descriptions of what the sky people appeared to the population. But what Dan's gleaning is that it was nothing frightening, terrifying, or otherwise disturbing to the residents.
All right, look for more details in the upcoming Paranormal Pendulum 4.
Yeah.
Just sticking with the sky people just for a few minutes yet before we say goodbye, and that is when you have these communications with our ancestors about sky people, how do they, you say they were non-threatening, they weren't frightening, it was companies coming, but when we look at our ancestors or consider our ancestors and possible interactions with extraterrestrials or whatever, we assume that they looked at them as gods of some sort. Did they look at them that way?
No. I conducted two sessions in different cliff dwellings about 2 weeks ago. And yet, this is all tentative. We're still in the early stages of research. But I would go to the cliff dwelling, sit down, and I don't hold a seance. I just say, basically, if there's anyone here who would like to speak to me, I would appreciate speaking to me. And now we get a yes on the pendulum. Well, are you someone who lived here at the time this place was active? I would get a yes. And what I'm getting from them, the answer so far is the sky people weren't considered gods. They were considered people who came down in these strange machines and conducted trade in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So far there's no indication at all that they were considered gods.
Yeah, in some conversations I had at Poverty Point with this entity we recognize as Jacopo, apparently it's a little more hierarchical in this particular society because Jacopo presented himself as the go-between, that the sky people didn't mingle directly with the population at Poverty Point, but they would share information or other materials. And in return, Jacopo was describing his main service to the sky people was helping them understand human emotions and feelings, that this was something that they may had an intellectual awareness of, but because they themselves did not have that kind of emotional machinery, I guess use the word machinery, that this was a great learning opportunity for them. And apparently Jacopo was able to convey to them some appreciation for human emotions and feelings.
One of the things I kept coming across so far, again, this is early research, but they conducted trade, but the trade was in ideas.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Right.
More to come.
I mean, yeah. What would our ancestors have technology wise? Sky people would be interested.
Yeah. We got the sharp rock. You want this?
So what have you able to connect in terms of through communication using the pendulum with the spirit world, and the connection between extraterrestrials, sky people, the spirit of our ancestors. Is it a continuum? Is there a connection?
Yeah, let me intro and let George finish it. But there's a definite spiritual aspect to the UFO world, at least in terms of what George and I are doing. Our whole involvement, we have discovered, has been stage managed by the spirit side. In fact, there's a chapter in the book called The Stage Manager. And there's a specific spirit, probably more, but at least one specific spirit, who's kind of put together this whole team of the New Explorers Club, is what I call it. It's me and George and our mediums and our friends and some other dowsers. But the stage manager set this whole thing up, and let George finish it out.
In the process of the 2 years here, I realized that there are a lot of others who are interested in this particular research, and in particular having this Paranormal Pendulum Book 3 made available so that people can access it. And what Dan's alluding to is, during this process, I tended to get up very early in the morning, take a 3-mile walk to Mike Woods Park near the end of the Barksdale Air Force Base runway, and walk around and whatnot. And one winter morning, the baseball field was all sparkly, looked kind of nice. So I took out my iPhone, took a picture, put it on Facebook as they seen on this morning stroll. And a lot of people said, "Oh, George, that's just pretty, but what's the blue tennis ball?" What? Look at the photograph. And sure enough, there's a blue orb just above the ground. And I didn't even notice it. So I said, okay, fine. That's got to be a lens flare or something, because, you know, the sun is just rising. A couple of days later, making the same trek, roughly the same time. And I just kind of get the thought, well, let me recreate that photograph. So I'm in the same position, reframe the same image. Click, and lo and behold, there's another orb in it. And that continued for several walks over the next several days. And this is beyond lens flares or anything like that. Something's going on here. So I sent them all to Dan and said, "Dan, take out your powerful pendulum and see if you can get a feel for what's this orb thing? What's going on here?" And he spent some time with it and came up the conclusion that the orb is a spirit. It's a spirit known to me, but not in this lifetime. So, okay. And then I have kind of a little thought, well, let me look for 19th century American actresses. So I started searching the internet, and one name kept cropping up, Kate Bateman. And I started to do some newspaper.com research about Kate Bateman and her theatrical family. And yes, she was all over the country. In the 18th century, she was in New Orleans in December 1860 doing Juliet at St. Charles Theater, married an Englishman and went to England, very popular on the London stage, and brought this to Dan. Is this the blue orb, Dan? Is this Kate? And he got big, strong yes, took it to our evidential medium and had a special session just to see what she would pick up. And Kate pretty much presented herself. Much of that is in the book. And Kate basically said, "Hey, we all know each other. We've been doing this for a long time." And you could see her hand kind of just moving through this whole process, because everything just went click, 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 click. So a very active partner in this research has been Kate Bateman.
Did that name just come out of the ether into your.
It came out of just something I was seeing when I'm looking at 19th century American actresses, newspaper accounts, playbills. It just kept popping up. And yes, she was, in her subtle way, directing me. Like a friend of mine said, "Why didn't you look up 15th century physicist?" Well, I wouldn't find Kate Bateman there.
Exactly. Wow.
I looked at 19th century American actresses to find her. So there's so much method to the madness.
Right.
We had a lot of confidence in what Kate was presenting.
That's fascinating, because, you know, many of us have what we call happenstance or serendipities, and we don't know really what the connection is, and maybe we just disregard them. But maybe there's a stage manager behind all of that.
Yeah, this is a spiritual mission impossible. On the other side, at some point Kate Bateman sat down, opened up her little book. "Yeah, we need to advance Lindsay's story. Let's see. We got Dan. We'll put him in. We got George. We'll put him in. Got these two mediums. We'll put them in. Yeah, we'll throw in Joe. We'll throw in. Yeah, we got this guy over here. put together the whole team, and we all came together. It's amazing how this little team just kind of came together all on its own. And I think Kate is the motivating factor behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think for sure that Kate put the bug in Lindsay's ear about it's time to come out.
Fantastic. Well, it's all documented in Paranormal Pendulum 3, George Sewell, Dan Baldwin. What a wild ride. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Richard.
All right. We'll talk again soon, I hope.
A new Richard Sarrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Subscribe at strangeplanetpodcast.com.
An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extra-help.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extra-help.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.